Welcome to This Week in Digital Trust, 11M's regular conversation about all things tech policy, privacy, AI, and cybersecurity. I'm Jordan, joining you from Wurundjeri country, and this week I'm joined by Dr. James Meese. Dr. Meese is an associate professor at RMIT University, and his most recent book is Digital Platforms and the Press. Now, I plug it a bit in the episode, but it's genuinely, that book is a really good read. I encourage you to have a look. It's available free online, so no investment needed. We'll put a link to it in the description. But the book is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to James this week to break down the recent news about Meta's announcement that they're getting out of the news business entirely and that they won't be renewing the deals that they made with Australian news organisations in response to the news media bargaining code. So, James, fantastic to finally have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's great timing because, yeah, the news media bargaining code is back in the news. Meta's just announced that it doesn't intend to renew a bunch of commercial deals it's made with Australian media companies. There's been a whole bunch of coverage over the last few weeks, some quite hyperbolic coverage. Former Treasurer Peter Costello called it an existential moment for Australian media. Michael Miller, the executive chairman of News Corp Australia, said, "Shockwaves for Australia, our democracy, economy, and way of life are profound." You know, big news. I'm not sure it's quite that big, but it's probably, I think it's still significant that the money from Meta that's been flowing to Australian journalism is likely to dry up. But James, you've just written a book on this stuff. You've been researching the relationship between digital platforms and the press for a while now. So I want to hear from you. What's going on? How worried are we? What's the deal here?
Yeah, so I might start, if I can, just with the ground level. So what is the bargaining code?
Yes.
What was expected to happen and how did we end up here? So the code was introduced into Australian law in 2021. And it was a mechanism to transfer money from digital platforms, in this case, Google and Facebook, to the news media sector. And basically what happened is that process went through and through a variety of complicated backroom negotiations, et cetera, et cetera. A certain amount of money got transferred from Facebook and Google. They agreed to pay a series of news media companies. Our back of the envelope calculation was about $200 million. These were all contracts, and those contracts have now reached their course. Now, there was an expectation that, or maybe a hope, that Facebook, Meta in particular, would renew their contract. It's now come to this position where Meta has said, actually, we're fine. And it now raises a real kind of pressing question about to what extent can this bargaining code, which is supposed to enforce this kind of payment, actually do the job it's been set up to do.
The bargaining code never actually went into effect, right? Like it's this hanging threat that the government can force them to negotiate and arbitrate if they want, but they did the deals before it got to that stage, right?
Yeah, so this is the kind of wonderful sword of Damocles, as former ACCC chair Rod Sims likes to call it, where, you know, essentially, and I think it worked quite well for the Liberal Party in power at the time, that essentially, quote unquote, the deals were done, you know, in the free market. Now, obviously, that was a free market with a heavy hand of government.
With a stick.
With a stick behind it. But, you know, the deals were done, and I think, you know, it was good press, and that was a good outcome, really, for Australian journalism. Now, the challenge here, I think, is that now that the lapse has come about, the question is, okay, well, what happens if designation does occur? We've seen in recent reporting that the Labor government and Michelle Rowland is quite keen, I think, to at least seriously consider that path. And it raises real questions about what that arbitration process is, but also, you know, it starts to, I guess, signal the real power of arbitrators in this scenario to make a final determination, really, of a kind of unasked question, which is what is news worth to Meta, to the news companies and to society more broadly?
Yeah, and that's kind of the core theory behind the news media bargaining code and these deals, forcing these deals at all, right, is the idea that Google and Facebook are taking advantage of news in Australia and elsewhere. They're, you know, it's attention on their platform. They're selling ads against it. They're so powerful as platforms that, you know, news media can't do without them. So they're not in a bargaining position to make them pay a fair price. And so they need this government stick behind them, right, to negotiate a fair price for the news that's put on their platform. So that's not a new problem, right? There's kind of a long history of trying to get media to pay a fair price for news, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it kind of speaks, there's a lot in what you just said. So I think it kind of speaks also to the complexity of the news media bargaining code, where it's actually trying to do a lot of different things. I'll get to the history in a moment. But, you know, is it a substitute for lost advertising revenue? Is it something about the centralized nature of these intermediaries and news distribution, which kind of is a open question given that people go to TikTok or other platforms for news now as well? So, you know, I think it is, and I think Rod Sims has kind of recognized this in recent commentary where he said, we might actually need additional laws for what we want to do. But I'm happy to go to the history now and just mention that, you know, since the emergence of Google News, we've been trying to get platforms or aggregators or intermediaries to try and pay for news, or at least that's what the news media sector has sought to do.
Yeah, and so there's been a lot of talk in Europe for years and years about copyright, right? Like trying to control links through some kind of copyright law theory. There's more the news media bargaining code in Australia has been more through a like competition law lens, right? We're talking about the bargaining power between those two entities. But yeah, like you say, it's a much more complex relationship, right? Like Facebook's relationship to news is not just using links for free, and their impact on the news media is not just taking advertising revenue or using links for free. It's way more complicated than that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think you see this in these arguments where we're now worried, and this, you know, we should mention that one outcome from this standoff is that Facebook is currently in a standoff, or Meta is currently in a standoff in Canada, and they've removed news from their products there. That's similar to go back to Europe, in Google News in Spain. In the mid-2010s, Google News just exited Spain. Google just removed the news product from Spain because of a similar debate. You know, that's a real risk in Australia. So then we start asking questions, and there's concerns saying, well, you know, if we get rid of news on Facebook, there'll be too much misinformation. And we start to say, well, really, that's almost like a separate policy issue. So we start to see to what extent are we addressing misinformation? To what extent are we, you know, in essentially trying to enforce some sort of Pigouvian tax on, you know, in the same way that we might tax alcohol or cigarettes because we think they've got some negative externalities? Are we actually just saying, look, Facebook isn't great all the time, therefore bad Facebook, give us some money, which I think is maybe a more transparent and less complicated way of doing this kind of activity.
As an outsider as well, like I feel like that's the political appeal, right, of the news media bargaining code, is that you know, we don't like big tech companies. No one likes Facebook. We've also got this problem with the media, which is like kind of related, that like, you know, social media and, you know, this has complicated the media business. And so like, yeah, why don't we just get Facebook to pay for journalism in Australia?
And if I can just come into arbitration, I think it raises some really interesting points because Meta is moving away from news. We have seen that they've removed political content, which, you know, depending on your view of what political is, could be a much harder job to do than what they claim. But, you know, if Meta doesn't actually serve much news anymore, you know, the arbitrators may not, you know, they may come to, you know, it's unclear what they're going to do if this does indeed go to arbitration. And if there's not much news there, they might just say, well, the value exchange has lessened from these earlier deals because there's less quantum of news coming through this platform.
Yeah, and if Facebook's saying, well, look, we don't actually want news on our site, we're going to deprioritize it, we don't, you know, like it's more pain than it's worth, then maybe it's worth nothing, right, to Facebook to have these deals.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it speaks to this other question, which is just like, it's an open question, and I think this is really bringing up, to what extent do we want Facebook to actually be a key infrastructure for news?
Yeah.
You know, there's this presumption that maybe there's a lot of misinformation on Facebook. And even though Facebook says we want to get out of news as a democracy, we say, well, you're actually a key communication infrastructure. We actually want to force you to serve news or potentially even uprank it on the algorithm. Mm-hmm. Leaving aside all the other issues that might cause in terms of, you know, every other kind of legal area, that's a very different conversation, I think, from the code, which essentially tries to construe this relationship, this yeah. inner market, and presume that there's a kind of value exchange there.
Yeah. It's the bargaining code's focused on this, like, market-based financial value exchange. What it, you know, you sell ads against news, you get money from it, you should pay fair price for that. But yeah, I mean, we're more and more talking about the quality of the information environment on these online platforms, right? And so eSafety, for example, and others are talking more and more about like controlling misinformation and, you know, using algorithms, using warnings on content, using fact-checked links, particularly in election contexts, but also more broadly. I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is, right? It's not a competition-based answer. It's a, you know, it's implying all sorts of challenges of, you know, free speech and who decides what's true and whatnot. But there is increasingly an expectation that these platforms take responsibility for the quality of the information on their platforms. And yeah, journalism is a key part of that.
And I think just to speak to some of the downstream impacts of that, the types of audience that these people who are accessing news on these platforms are often incidental news readers. So these aren't the people who are going to seek out news on, you know, read three news sites in the morning or what have you. So there is a real democratic benefit, I think, to getting news out in front of these people.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say, maybe to kind of counter that, though, is that we've just also got to remember there's other ways of getting news in Australia. So, you know, I'm trying to kind of take both sides here and just think through different ways of understanding this challenge, that most Australians, you know, perhaps unsurprisingly, get their news from TV. You know, you come home, you watch TV. So, you know, obviously we
which as a like lefty elite who doesn't have a TV in his lounge room, like that's, you know, that's weird to me, but like, sure. Yeah. Just
enjoy your soy latte, Jordan, you know?
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I think, you know, people do read, you know, online news. It's actually quite a popular news source for millennials or the Gen Y demographic. So, you know, I think there's also this presumption, and I think it was true around the time the News Media Bargaining Code was being devised and the policy discussion was occurring. Mm. At that time, social media was a key intermediary for news distribution, but I think that is changing. There are other sources of news. And I think we need to look also at the ecosystem of news distribution and think seriously about how each different platform sits within that.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So, I mean, Facebook is certainly, you know, seems to be in decline, right? Like there's other platforms, there's other things. But you're saying also the role of social media as the distributor is declining as well.
Well, it's definitely flatlining.
There's a tendency in tech to like assume, you know, social media has been so dominant for so long, and you kind of assume that it's always going to be the case or something, or that there's not going to be a new thing to replace it.
Because I think one thing to think about here is also that these are different platforms. So I think there was a real tendency in the code to conflate Facebook and Google as these big, scary tech companies, but they're actually very different and doing very different things. I think we saw that in the initial negotiation round where Google played much more fairly with the kind of news companies than Meta, who was quite reticent, and that's now a matter of public record. So that kind of speaks, I think, to Google being an information service and quality news actually being more vital to them than something like Facebook, where even though we're worried about misinformation, we're worried about all these different things at its heart. Facebook in particular can make a really compelling claim that it's a social network Sure, they had growth, you know, plans, and they thought they were going to be the hub of everything, but things change.
Yeah.
And does a social network need news? Maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, it's a problem with terminology as well. Like, we just call them all platforms or whatever, and rather than and intermediaries, without kind of examining exactly how they work. But like, it's very obvious the way you just put it, right? That like, one can imagine Facebook still operating without news on it. One can't imagine Google operating without linking to news. So like it's critical for Google, and Google's relationship to truth or authority as well, right? Their whole business is giving you authoritative sources from across the internet, right? The challenges of kind of mis and disinformation and their relationship to news for Google is like completely different.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting now is Meta's withdrawal, because it does raise questions about Google's response as well, because, you know, Google signed contracts too, and those contracts will also expire. Now, Google might just be a good corporate citizen and keep going. You know, it's not like they're short of money. Yeah. And, you know, at a broad level, I think we can say, for all those reasons you just outlined, there's signs pointing towards ongoing engagement with news. There's the, you know, obviously they've got Gemini now, but more broadly there is that concern about AI. The role of search is definitely under question, so they are keen to buttress that. And, you know, OpenAI, you know, signed a license with Le Monde just the other day. So, you know, I think Google's keen and starting to think through what that means for them. But on the other hand, you know, things may change if Meta somehow doesn't pay, even if we go to forced arbitration. If they get away with not paying, or even paying, say, a smaller amount, you've got to ask, now that we've got this structure in place, what actually is the incentive for Google to pay more than Meta? Or obviously they pay more than Meta in the first round, but it does change the game a little bit.
And they did pay more than Meta in the first round, right? Like, it was like two. I mean, none of these deals are public, right? So it's all just estimation and guesswork and some good reporting. But the numbers are ballpark 200, 250 million across both. And then most of that, I saw a number that was like estimating like 70 million or something of that was coming from Meta. And then the rest from Google. So like most of the money flowing from the bargaining code was Google, but like 70 million a year is still a big hit for Australian media if it disappears.
Absolutely.
What happens to Australian media losing this money? Is there a rethinking? What happens to Australian media if they're not on Facebook? If they're, you know, like, I think one of the things I really liked about your book is you chart the kind of relationship and history between media and Facebook and Google and algorithms, and how the kind of incentive structures or the ways of engaging audiences or the ways that information is presented on these platforms kind of shapes for media the way that they present or the way that they focus. And big organizations are slower to move than smaller ones. You know, there's this kind of ongoing relationship and interaction of shaping. And if Facebook's just kind of walking away from, like, are they going to change their mind again in a year? Are they going to come, like, cast into your crystal ball? I know it's an impossible question, but do you have thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think, like, you know, my default answer is always, like, it's complicated, right? Yeah. Classic Facebook answer. But I think, you know, I like to look forward. I see Facebook and Meta, you know, not really wanting to engage with news. You know, it's been almost 10 years since Donald Trump, since that moment. Like, you know, I think thinking about it more from a risk and governance perspective, why as a company would you have this open yourself up to that sort of risk framework, leaving aside the fact that they've got misinformation on the platform already that they're trying to battle, but, you know, there's just challenges that they've been exposed to through news, just as a, maybe as a vector through which to think through problems. So once you start accepting news, you say, well, how are we going to uprank good news? And, you know, then you get into even just the kind of corporate challenges of, well, now we're kind of entangled, as you know, the book kind of outlines, in this separate market that is just very complicated, has its own challenges. But I think it's really important to note that there was this real high point of social news in the mid-2010s. But we've seen that go. BuzzFeed shut down in Australia and elsewhere. Vice has had many deaths, but I think the most recent one is permanent.
Yeah, and it's definitely not the like $5 billion company that it was in 2014 or whatever. Yeah, no.
And I think the other major factor is news companies are losing revenue. There's no doubt about that.
I'm really
understanding why they are keen for the code, because when you're losing a lot of money and there's an opportunity to get money, sure. You know, there's no, it's a pretty simple game here, and there's not really a long-term sustainable business model. But what we are seeing is a turn to subscriptions by a kind of what we might call high level, New York Times, The Guardian, even like Fairfax News, Kia, trying to double down on that kind of membership and commitment model, where you're actually trying to build not a broad audience, which was the social strategy, but a dedicated paying audience that, you know, supports a particular product for particular reasons. And that may not just be about the kind of news updates, but almost the kind of values and the kind of agenda that they offer to a particular reader.
This is not maybe not a new problem, but that leads to its own problems, right? Of like, you, like polarizing audiences, and like you maybe you've got a outlet that writes increasingly for, you know, a left or a right audience, and you know, the polarization of political conversation. Is that a legitimate risk, or am I just kind of worrying?
Well, I think it's been part of like the sector as long as it's been around.
Yeah,
you know, from the kind of Bernie Dreadfuls. There's the Sun. There's the Daily Mirror. There's, you know, Guardianistas who may or may not have a TV in their house. Who are more left wing.
Yeah, so
I think it's a long term issue, but I think the lack of advertising, I think it's a fair point to bring up, because the decline in advertising means that you're more inclined to lean in on that subscription base and
into,
you know, obviously the content's always going to be newsworthy, the content's always going to be valuable, but you might start thinking more about that particular institution.
About your dedicated audience, whereas like reliance on advertising revenue is an incentive to broaden your audience rather than narrow it. So yeah, I mean, that's super interesting. I mean, I want to come back to something you said a second ago about just like a sustained decline in revenue for journalism and the news. And like, that's a problem, right? Like as a liberal democracy, we need news. We need journalism. It is a key part of the way that our society functions. What do we do? How do we, you know, fix it, James?
Here's the answer. I'll give it to you, right? I wish I knew, because I'd be making a lot more money, I think, consulting with, like, capital T, the capital A answer.
Yeah.
But one thing I can talk to is it's on the government's agenda, and there's currently a consultation on the News Media Assistance Program. The government's had a range of different efforts, both pre and during COVID, to support news companies, particularly in regional areas, through direct funding grants. But this inquiry, I think, goes a lot further. There's been long histories in Europe of government providing funding, not just to ad hoc grants or through regional remote media, although that's important, but even to commercial media.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Australia is now starting to think seriously about this careful balance between government support for commercial media and obviously retaining media independence and so on. At a critical level with Australia's tyranny of distance is rural, regional and remote newspapers that are declining, but obviously our metropolitan newspapers as well. You know, they're not going to fall over tomorrow, but there's still challenges with business models that the sector is trying to work out. And I think there's a real serious discussion about how we can ensure the sustainability of the sector, with the government potentially playing a role there.
Yeah, I'll be super interested to see what comes out of that consultation. Yeah, cool. So we'll maybe get you on, James, for the, you know, when the government's come up with all its solutions to talk us through.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on, James. I'll plug your book as well, again.
One thing would you mention is just that it's open access, so it's free.
Ah, awesome. Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
And thanks so much for reading. Like, it's actually genuinely, like, not many people read what you write, so I can genuinely appreciate it.
It's genuinely good. So, yeah, I really enjoy it.
Yeah,
so,
thanks, mate. Yeah.